Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend show. As always, also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. It was another busy week because of the Fed meeting and the volatility that we are seeing really in every market, and unfortunately for the precious metals investors, what looks like another week of a little bit of disappointment. We are kicking off the show with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer at Merk Investments. Axel, since the Fed met this week, let's start there. We really didn't hear too much new out of the Fed other than, look, they are confirming that it seems like March will be the start of their rate hiking cycle. The unwind of QE would have been done by that time. And then a lot of questions around some sort of balance sheet unwinding or quantitative tightening. We don't know when that's going to happen. And quite frankly, I think the Fed just wants to see how the markets react to the start of rate hikes. Axel, what's your thought broadly this year as it comes to the Fed and what they keep telling us is going to be a rate hiking cycle starting in March?
Well, great to be with you again. And the first couple of hours answering your question, I'll focus on one aspect and then I'll go into the next one. Let me try to take a step back. Overall, the Fed was caught behind the curve. At the latest last August, they should have realized that inflation is running high. They apparently noodled around with that concept in December, which became more clear when they published their so-called minutes. And now they're going to continue to print money, but now they're quote-unquote humble and might hike rates. And so historically, when you're faced with inflation, you don't fix it with a salami tactic. You go out front, which means in this August, in December, or maybe with intraday, they should have done something, certainly not continue to print money. And what happens, some people say, oh, now they've caught up and they're all hawkish and all that. But basically, the implication is what you see. You see volatility because the Fed, as it's trying to play catch up, the markets will throw a fit. And we're going to go back and forth. And the proof is, of course, going to be in the pudding, which nobody knows what that pudding is going to look like. And so we see gyrations in the market. And that's probably what we will continue to see. Clearly, when you're faced with new information, you shouldn't start a debating club. You should act. And you reference the balance sheet. I mean, that's a prime example of a debating club. They got burned last time when they reduced the balance sheet. And so they decided to just not look at it. And the so-called principles that they now published, it's really they were scrambling to decide what to do. They decided, all right, we got to hike rates. That's what we have to do. And then they decided, well, we got to put out something. And so they put out some platitudes on what they're going to do with the balance sheet. But they haven't really thought about it. And so in the meantime, Powell, during his press conference, was repeating his talking points and scared the markets into thinking he's going to be super hawkish. And nobody really knows, including the Fed, what they'll actually be doing.
Well, Axel, as they embark on this rate hiking cycle, and it will be a series of hikes, some people are saying 3 to 4, JP Morgan with Jamie Dimon saying 8, who knows what it'll actually be. But is there going to be a point where people realize, even the generalists realize, that even if they start hiking these rates, they're not anywhere close to where the inflation rates are running? With CPI running at 7% for December, even if it ratchets down a little bit, can they really stop inflation or squash it down by doing 0.25% hikes, even if they do 4, 5, 6 of them?
Well, it depends on where you're philosophically or politically on this. First of all, as we're through Powell's press conference, there was one additional rate hike priced in. And so the market at the end of the press conference priced in 5 rate hikes for this year. That's what the market says. So whatever that may be. But overall, yes, I mean, everybody is kind of thinking, well, what can they do? It remains to be seen, right? From a perspective of what needs to be done. Again, you don't amputate a leg by starting with a toe, right? You amputate the leg, so you should go out in front of it. What the Fed is doing is saying, well, if inflation persists and we think inflation is going to be no problem, then we'll just have to keep raising rates. And to those who are critical of that, including me, saying, well, no, that is a very high-risk approach. What you do is you get out up front in the problem. You don't just rely on the reputation of the Fed to fight inflation. You actually do it by showing some action. And I know that a lot of your listeners will say, well, what reputation of the Fed? When I talk about reputation of the Fed, I look at what the market is thinking. So in the market, for example, you can with some fancy math, you can say what inflation expectations are 5 years out, 10 years out. Well, nobody has a clue what inflations are 10 years out. But what the market says is that they believe the Fed will get this under control. And you and I may have our doubts. What surprised me, if there was something that was surprising at the meeting, is that there weren't any dissents. We have the most hawkish FOMC members that are voting this year in many, many years. And so I would have thought that Esther George, a very hawkish person who is not afraid to be outspoken, would have dissented, maybe two others. Nobody did. And so the question to me really is, what did Powell promise them? And I think this dance around flexibility and being humble and with the market and saying, oh, they could actually do more, is what it got to have these hawkish Fed member back off. And so that's in the context of there is, quote unquote, confidence that the Fed will do the right thing. Now, I cannot build my investment strategy based on hopes that things will work out fine. I happen to think this is a very dangerous road that they're on. And so I happen to think that, to answer your question, inflation is a process. And once inflation is high, people will try to raise prices no matter what. I agree that supply chain issues will eventually be resolved. The fiscal stimulus is a bit less. The year-over-year comparisons are more difficult. But if I look at the sort of wages I just pay in my own firm these days, if I look at the price hikes I see everywhere, I don't see that just vanish because the Fed has some more hawkish talk.
So, Axel, I understand that the Fed is concentrating on inflation because inflation has run a lot hotter than they expected last year. What about the markets? How do those play into the Fed's outlook, too? Because we've seen the Fed backtrack on policy due to market weakness. And boy, oh boy, this month, the start of this year already has been very volatile for really every sector.
Well, as much as we all like to believe that the Fed focus on the equity markets, what they really focus on is what they call our financial conditions, which means the spreads of risk assets in the fixed income market, including junk bonds, over treasuries. And so that happens to be correlated with the S&P 500. But and of course, the more hawkish tone ever since the FOMC minutes have come out have increase those spreads, those financial conditions have quote unquote tightened, but just a tad. And by the way, that's one of the reasons why the Fed thinks they have all the time in the world, because they've already talked financial conditions a little bit tighter, which is of course cheaper in quotes than hiking rates. It's of course always a very fine line. And with all this credit we have in the economy and the leverage we have everywhere, it's of course very, very possible that there are spillover effects to the S&P 500 and other markets that then can lead to quite a severe downdraft. And if that were to happen, odds are that the availability of credit to these overleveraged businesses is drying up, and that's when the Fed would get concerned. But as long as it's quote unquote just the S&P 500 that's plunging, that's not going to sway them.
Well, actually, just another question that I don't think a lot of mainstream media addresses, and that is with the Fed finishing their tapering and pulling back what they were doing of $120 billion a month of bond purchases down to zero in just two more months now. Do you think there's going to be a point where the bond market has a reaction to this, where there's not enough people to buy the bonds when the United States put theirs up for auction? And could that be a cause of a great rotation out of bonds, you know, looking to other sectors? Could some of that money come into the general equities to help, I guess, buoy them? Could some of that come into precious metals? Will they go into cryptos? Do you think there'll be a migration out of bonds as this unfolds?
Well, sure. I mean, bonds have become far riskier, so to speak. They're always riskier, but the Federal Reserve's job is take out the perceived risk. But regarding the balance sheet, one thing to keep in mind, so the Fed will phase out its purchases in March, and then hasn't announced yet, has to get its act together, who knows when, might start reducing the balance sheet. And many people, including us, think that if, and that's a big if, and when they start to get to that, it might be as much as $80 billion, $85 billion a month in reduction. And they can do that mostly because the maturity of the portfolio they have in treasuries is very short. Now, that said, we have a European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan that keeps printing. And incidentally, that's just about in that order of magnitude. And so we're not exactly taking liquidity out of the market. We shouldn't think of the U.S. as an isolated space. As long as you have free capital flows, and by the way, that's why we don't include what the Chinese are doing. But as the big three central banks, a treasury is kind of interchangeable with a bond. Now, obviously, currency risk and so forth, and it's different governments and different types of risk, but those are in their respective countries considered to be the safe assets. And so there will be, if the Europeans are printing money and the Japanese continue to print money, it's not like we are withdrawing the liquidity left and right. And so these are all things on the margin that have an impact. Now, where will the money move? First of all, some money will just evaporate. Because when leverage is reduced, which is one of the side effects of tightening conditions, the money just is gone. It's not just it's moving from A to B. And then where it goes, well, the meme stocks haven't had much money. I've called it the funny money season is over. And so yeah, kind of that quote-unquote bubble, so to speak, maybe burst for good. And whether or not it moves to something like gold, well, the way I look at gold is that gold obviously doesn't pay you a dividend. And so I look at it whether on a real basis it is attractive to hold cash. And there I'm looking less at the short-term rates, but something like a 10-year yield. And as we're talking, we are just under minus 60 basis points on 10-year real yield. So you're paying the government, so to speak, 60 basis points, 0.6% a year for the honor of holding treasuries. And that's up from about minus 1% just a few weeks ago. But as long as those real yields continue to be a somewhat negative, there is really very little incentive to hold treasuries, and something like gold does well. The other thing that gold historically has done, and we've seen in up to today we're speaking here pretty much, but gold had been a good diversifier in much of January to buffer the drafts. And I think that role it continues to have. Now, clearly, if the Fed were to do a Volcker on us, then you will get compensated on cash and gold will be no good. If you think that the Fed is going to, quote unquote, overdo it and kill the economy, well, guess what? Then they have to cut rates again, right? And where do they go, right? And so it's really, as I said in the beginning, we'll see volatility. You kind of want to wake up your mind how this is going to play out. And then stick to that plan and cross-check it periodically, but not get jolted around every 5 minutes, and because that will probably be a sure way of losing money.
So, Axel, let's focus a little bit more on gold, because there are a lot of gold investors that are saying, look, inflation is high and keeps on rising. Real yields continue to be negative, and gold continues to correct. It's a 16-plus month correction right now in an environment where the gold investors have been told this should be the perfect environment. Now, I realize that there are some other factors at play here, and it's more about the direction in terms of where rates or real rates are going. Plus, we do have to understand that the Fed is starting a rate hiking cycle. No one knows how long that is going to take, but what do you have to say to those gold investors that are saying, look, gold should be doing better. I'm getting tired of this sector because gold has continued to underperform practically everything.
Well, let's start with the quote-unquote good news. Some folks who have been quote-unquote tired of gold have chased the meme stocks and other things. And in some ways, that's one of the factors that has reduced the volatility in the sector somewhat because we don't have the short-term speculator there quite as much. That said, yes, I mean, investing is all about surviving the frustration you have with whatever the market throws at you. And any gold investor is quite familiar with that. Gold is the type of asset that with hindsight, it was always good to hold it, and you never quite know why you hold it for tomorrow, right? And I don't think that has changed much. It's a, and if you'd ask me what the price of gold is going to be tomorrow, I don't know. Where you ask me where it's going to be in 5 years, well, I think the Fed will have been through the tightening and we may be back on the easing cycle, and late cycle gold tends to do well. Does it mean it can't get whacked around in between? Yeah, of course it can. And if you go to the gold miners, the large companies have the best balance sheet they've had in years, which is good on the one hand, but on the other hand, it reduces the leverage to the price of gold. And that's part of the reason why they hadn't read it quite as much. We believe that these big companies need to go out and acquire additional resources so that they have to replenish the gold, so to speak, that they're getting out of the ground. And so we see a lot of opportunity there, but yes, that's a very, very volatile sector, and a sector where these exploration companies, they need to access the markets once a year, once every other year. And if financial conditions are tight, that's obviously a significant risk in a rising rate environment. So this has always been a volatile space. I like it, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be smooth sailing in an environment where the Fed hasn't really made up its mind on many things. And keep in mind, as much as you may love or hate the Fed, they do have the bazooka at the end of the day.
They do have a bazooka. The question I have, Axel, is did they wait too long to use it? Because we've hit what was a pretty good growth period a year ago, and now we're getting to the point where we're seeing a lot of forecasts for GDP growth to start tapering down and slowing down. The economy itself could be slowing down. And so if you look at what we have as kind of a stagflationary environment where growth is slowing, wages are high, energy prices are high, inflation is high, and they do this possibly policy error by hiking too aggressively, could we actually trigger a recession? And if that's the case, would that environment get some safe haven flows into gold potentially?
Yeah, it sure might. And when I look at investing, it's about taking risk scenarios into account. And you use the word stagflation, right? Nothing is like the 1970s. Well, yeah, there are plenty of parallels, and they are piling up. And yes, the Fed was absolutely late, and that's why we'll see, in my view, volatility. Right. And yes, we'll see a slowdown. What the Fed did is we had supply chains clogged up and they put the pedal to the metal. In addition, we got fiscal spending. So the demand was high. Well, guess what? You get inflation if you can't produce enough. Now, presumably with Omicron wave getting lower and midterm election coming up, we might open up the economy. Sorry, I did not say that the government is going to base policy based on politics. It's purely based on the virus abating. But if you look at China, for example, I wouldn't be surprised that after the Olympics, they move on from their super tight policy, which means that you will have some of these supply bottlenecks opening up. And so we'll continue to get a very, very mixed bag of data. But to the question of whether the Fed could induce a recession, yeah, absolutely, it's possible. And whether that would be beneficial to the price of gold, presumably. I mean, it depends, right? Because if we have a Paul Volcker who decides that interest rates need to go very high, then not. I happen to think that Mr. Powell is no Paul Volcker, and the price of gold will be doing just fine in the years to come.
So, Axel, what do you think are the key catalysts this year then? Since we are still so early in the year and a lot is changing this year compared to last year, what do you think is going to be most important for investors to watch, whether they're invested in gold, U.S. markets, or simply just watching these markets?
Well, in the long run, you want to look at these longer term inflation expectations. And the reason is because they're the best gauge whether the market, not you or I, but the market has confidence in the Fed's ability to get inflation under control. And the reason I refer to the dissents is because if Powell manages to hurt the cats at the Fed, that will instill some confidence into the market that he got that. And so then we just have to think about what's going to happen in the economy overall and what those implications are. But if we're going to see some dissent saying, hey, the Fed isn't doing enough, Or if we get a governor dissent, not just the regional presidents, the governors historically rarely ever dissent, that means that that Powell is losing control over herding the cats. For now, they give him the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, yeah, you continue doing your job. So that's the one thing I'm most concerned about looking at that. Other than that, with regard to gold, I'm somebody who likes to look at real interest rates, not on a current basis, but on a forward-looking basis, the TIPS yield, the inflation-protected securities yield. That's something I watch closely. And then otherwise, what I'm looking at is whether gold continues its function as a diversifier. And I have little doubt that it does. But it doesn't mean it always has a zero correlation to the S&P 500. These things morph in and out. And so it remains to be seen. But we see money attracted to gold when it serves the core function of being a diversifier, when it is a hedge against a negative real yield. And then, of course, you got the trend followers, and they haven't been as active in the gold market, which I, if anything, see somewhat of a positive because it also reduces the amplitude on the corrections.
Well, Axel, you had mentioned that we may be in the end of funny money season. So I just want to circle back to that before we wrap up, because we have seen some pretty crazy things over the last couple of years with so many new investors opening trading accounts, record amounts of new people at home, stuck at home, that decided they're going to start becoming day traders or investors. And so we saw the rise of the meme stocks, which you referenced earlier, but we also saw NFTs, cryptos racing to the moon, biotech stocks, Tesla being worth more than all the other 14 car companies. It just seemed like there, Cathie Wood's ARK Innovations Fund and growth stocks taking off. And now there's been a shaking of the tree. Do you think we're kind of at an end of cycle period after a 12-year run from the great financial crisis to present?
Well, the beginning of the end, let's put it this way. The thing is that, as Greenspan said in '96, markets can be markets are exuberant, right? But they can be irrational longer than you can be solvent. So I'm not suggesting all the craziness that's been induced since the financial crisis is going to be over. But the slight tightening does expose some of the craze that's out there. And there's just a story out there, and I'm not giving an investment recommendation on any of these stocks, but apparently the attorney general in Massachusetts is suing Fidelity because the blokes who opened options accounts had too easy a time to open option accounts. When they got rejected, they just refilled another application that said where they said they have more experience, and then apparently it's Fidelity's fault that those guys lied. And so there will be, once you are in this phase where the party is coming to an end, you suddenly the regulator is going to come and clamp down on many of these things. And so if I just look at the asset flows, we had until a few days ago a lot of retail money out of equity markets. As we're speaking, recent days, some of that has come back in. I would not rule out that not all irrationality in the market is going to be evaporating, but this slight tightening might expose some of the worst excesses. And I specifically single out the meme stocks because I think most people would agree on that, whereas some of the other things you mentioned, reasonable minds might disagree on some details.
All right, Axel, we're wrapping it up here. It's always interesting hearing your take on the markets. I enjoy reading over all of your work, and quite frankly, I really appreciate you taking some time to share your thoughts on this year and the Fed and the whole situation that it's not just the U.S. is in right now. But boy, oh boy, this year is sure going to be interesting. Axel, thank you as always for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend, and I look forward to bringing you back on the show next month.
Thank you. And follow me on Twitter at Axel Merck. Thanks, and take care.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.